Hi, this is Wendy Rule, sending you love and magic from Melbourne, Australia. My website is www.wendyrule.com and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Ghostly Talk? You go to addunderground.com and click on Slack and Radio every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time to check out past shows of Ghostly Talk.
Dr. Ron P. Milione. Did I pronounce it right, Ron?
Milione,
is that how you want it? Okay. Dr. Ron P. Milione is a chief instructor, electrical engineer, and networking and programming engineer for the U.S. Navy, Army, and Intelligence at the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy GMATS division. He has previously worked as an engineer for many large companies on top of that. He also serves as an adjunct professor at Briarcliff College and St. John's University. Dr. Milioni is also the R&D manager for the Atlantic Paranormal Society. He is also working on many experiments, including recreating, you guys ready for this, the Philadelphia experiment with John Hutchinson. If you don't know who John Hutchinson is, we need to help you out.
Amen.
John, the Hutchinson
exactly.
effect, it's crazy, you know. With John, along with present and future paranormal technologies that he is developing on his own, which we have seen firsthand.
Yeah, it's amazing.
At the CPRI conference. Dr. Milioni, welcome to the show.
Happy Memorial Weekend to you guys and all the audience out there.
Well, thanks for coming on the holiday weekend like this. Also, we really appreciate it. We have a lot to cover, I think. You know, we had the pleasure, I should say, of meeting you at the CPRI first annual CPRI conference. And I have to say, I'm going to tell you firsthand, you had the funnest presentation out of all the presentations that were done that day. We had an absolute ball listening to what you had to say.
Even with the Freudian stuff.
One comment I want to make is, you guys got April 28th. Do you mean May 28th? I was looking on the website.
Oh, did I put April? Did I put April on there?
You got April up there.
You're kidding me.
I'm serious.
You know what? I did that today because I had to readjust the schedule. And I did that.
Okay.
I did that today. You know what? And as well, and while we're speaking right now, you're gonna see some magic happen. Okay.
Okay.
I'm gonna perform a magical trick on the website. Are you guys ready for this? I need a drum roll from somebody to help me out with this. Thank you.
Put the refresh button at the same time.
Okay. While you're doing your magic, can I say it? Hi, Manny.
Hi, Manny.
We got Manny, who's a great friend of mine, and. Just to give the audience just a 30-second overview,
mm-hmm.
we had here in New York area, we had a great air show with the Blue Angels and some Air Force stunts. It was just phenomenal. I mean, almost 500,000 people out there, and it was just rock and rolling today on the beach over Long Island, New York, which is just out of New York City.
You guys were out there today, you said?
Yeah, we were out there today just watching the air show. It was fantastic.
You know, I think I spent my whole day today. Well, tomorrow's officially Memorial Day, right? It's always on Monday. It's always on Monday. Okay, I'm gonna spend mine at work again. I think so. I just work all the time, I guess. I know a lot of people, especially my parents, they celebrate Memorial Day too. It's a great holiday. It used to be fun for me, but now I work all the time, so I don't get to do anything. Unfortunately, sounds like you guys had a really cool time though. So hi, Manny. Hello, Manny. How you doing? We saw your presentation, like I said a second ago. We had a really great time watching you talk. You build stuff, basically. Am I correct? I mean, you build these things from the ground up.
Exactly. Yeah. It's basically, you know, remember the old Munsters and Grandpa in the basement?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's got his, you know, his full laboratory, like, corner to corner.
Mm-hmm.
Except he was working with test tubes, so I'm kind of working, not really too much test tubes, but more of these electronic devices stuff. But similar concept. Down into the basement, but actually I'm using another level of the area,
mm-hmm.
more on the kitchen area, in other words, the upper floor, but kind of the, you know, underground, garage, basement type of, you say, part-time inventor.
Uh-huh. Well, I know, and you had like a pile of things that you discussed and showed us at the presentation. These things are built based on, I mean, sound scientific theory. I mean, and obviously you have a lot of years in the field studying this sort of stuff. I mean, I'm just curious, what pushed you into this direction? I mean, this sounds like it's more of a hobby for you. Am I correct?
Absolutely, Scott. It's a hobby, a long time. I've been intrigued probably when I was like in the teens when I first heard the word UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, what is that acronym? And then someone said, unidentified flying object. And I'm like, what is it, you know, UFO? And then I'm saying, wait a minute, you got stuff up there that people are claiming they're seeing something,
mm-hmm.
but they can't really prove it to you. So I'm saying, well, there's got to be a way to eventually try and capture this evidence. So there's been an intriguing kind of ongoing circular research since I was a teenager. So it kept going and going and going and going. I said, eventually there's going to be enough technology that we could really either prove or disprove that, yeah, this exists, or it belongs to this classification. So
mm-hmm.
that's where the background really occurs.
Well, and a lot of these tools, I mean, and that's what it seems, you know, there's a lot of tools out there that you can buy on the market, like, you know, obviously digital recorders, digital cameras, analog cameras, if you're old school like that.
Yep.
There's only a handful of people, I think, still use 35 millimeter these days. But there's
the air show today.
What's that? Oh, the air show.
Somebody
okay.
were at the air show today with 35 millimeter cameras.
There's nothing like
but
it.
You're right.
I agree.
I mean, there was technology that, unless you had a tremendous, huge research and development budget, you know, talking billions of dollars, like Sony Corporation,
mm-hmm.
you know, Samsung, where you could come up with a digital recorder, you can't make that in your basement. I mean, obviously you can't because you couldn't compete with that type of technology.
Mm-hmm.
But there's areas where, I call it, there's gaps, major gaps that with enough type of basic, maybe technology, basic technology, you could fill these gaps and go, wait a minute, they go from digital and they go to analog, but, you know, we could come up with something in between,
mm-hmm.
and with a so-called semi-not-too-expensive, reasonable budget, what could the independent inventor or, you know, researcher, maybe he could kind of come up with something that it may be a tool that he could add to, you know, to the paranormal research investigation teams out there. And well, that's where I basically look into. So what areas are we missing that, is it affordable that I could do, or, like, something that we could come up with? Otherwise, there are certain technologies where it's so just incredible, you need so much incredible amount of funds that it'd be just impossible. In other words, you would need like budgets like the military research or something. But there is areas where people probably don't look at. And what's interesting about it, what I do is look at other fields out there and take those concepts and go, wait a minute. Well, we got the security field out there, which has been doing a lot of tremendous business in, you know, your house premise, you know, regular business, your car alarm systems. You take some of that technology and you just say, if I take a piece of this and that, let me reapply it, and now I can make it more to a paranormal too.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the ideas start to, you know, develop in my situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing is, I mean, like I said before, there's a lot of products out there that you can purchase. They're just general products. I mean, and that's one thing we've been saying since day one here. I mean, when I went out and bought my first camera, for example, I didn't just use it for ghost hunting, right? I mean, I used it for other stuff. I mean, you go to a wedding, you used it for there, or, you know, just take pictures of whatever, stuff like that. I bought my digital recorder. It was more, you know, I could use it for all types of stuff. I used it in college to record my professor's lectures and stuff like that and whatnot. It was a multi-use tool. What you're working on are more tools that are tailored towards paranormal investigations. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. I mean, these are specialized tools.
Specialized tools where the more concentrated in a specific, let's say, frequency, in other words, more of a filtering concept.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if we look at maybe heat, what we call is like an inhuman spirit. Inhuman spirit, theoretically, there's an increase in temperature. So mm-hmm. then I look at what type of device can we look at a sudden increase in ambient temperature, you know, in a certain geometric or geographic area,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I kind of focus on. I go, okay, there is such parts of technology that we could put together just to concentrate on a sudden increase in heat temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you guys saw at the CPIR conference there,
mm-hmm.
The first introduction of something called the paranormal heat detector,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
a.k.a. PhD device.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay, all right. Well, no
pun intended. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. Well, no, I mean,
a PhD.
Well, I wish I had a PhD. No, and you did show a lot of these. You did show, I'm trying to keep it together. I really am. I'm doing the best I can here. No, you're
doing a great job.
Well, thank you very much. You know, everybody's been saying that tonight because I mean, like, everybody's like, okay, Scott, just calm down. Don't break stuff yet. Don't break stuff yet. Just calm down. You're doing okay. You showed us a ton of products, and that was just a ton of things that were projects you've worked on and things like that. These have all been used in the show, obviously, too. These have been used in Ghost Hunters by Taps, a lot of these things that you built. My thing I'm just curious about is, do Jason and Grant or any of the people from the team, do they have input on this also? Do they tell you, hey, we're looking for this. This is what we want to try to pick up. And do you tailor it around those opinions?
Good question. I mean, mm-hmm. Jason and Grant, I mean, think of it like top management people.
Mm-hmm.
They're like in the echelon chain there. You know, they're kind of like overall like top management.
Mm-hmm.
More specific, you know, bits and bytes and stuff comes from, let's say, Steve. Steve And of course, complimenting Brian. You know, Steve will, because, and the field investigators, since they're actually really, you know, using a lot more, there's a lot more researchers in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Like Grant and Jay, say, concentrate on the thermal imaging
mm-hmm.
product.
Mm-hmm.
But outside that spectrum, there is, you know, you got the low frequency, high frequency, medium frequency, the EMF stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So all the other field, like say Steve, Brian, you might have Kristen, you got Donna.
Mm-hmm.
These guys here are the ones that actually really will take my stuff, go out there and go, hey, we really got something here, there's a problem with this new prototype because it's physically too heavy, or B, it's not giving me an audible tone, it's just giving me a visual light. So the feedback from those guys will say, okay, I need to maybe tweak this device, or it's not working out altogether because it's not giving them good data. But it's mostly more due to visual and audio effects. So sometimes for example, when you guys saw the paranormal heat detector,
yeah,
one feedback from Jason was, and this is true, he goes, I hate loud noise when I'm like searching for an entity. So my device, as you saw it on the conference there, as you're pointing it to people and you get this black body radiation, all of a sudden you're hearing, yeah, right? Yes, you got the light on at the same time. But the problem was with that is, can you cut that noise? In other words, there's a little alert, you know, control on that device.
Mm-hmm.
So what I had to do is the last week or so, I implemented a cutoff switch, an audio cutoff switch. So I cut, when you hit that switch to the off position, you don't get that sudden alert tone in your ear, but you get the light. So in other words, you still get the same paranormal, let's say, alert effect, but you're not being startled. Sometimes when you're trying to sneak up on the entity, all of a sudden you get this loud tone, you actually scare yourself out of your awareness of the investigation. So that was the feedback from Jason directly.
Well, and that does make sense. I mean, that's one thing growing up when I was, you know, with my father or my grandfather, we'd go fishing, right? I think we all did that thing. We'd go fishing. And the one thing, the first rule of fishing was be quiet. Don't make
that's
any
right.
noise. You'll scare the fish away, and the fish won't bite on the hook, and you won't get a fish, and you won't feel good about yourself, right? So, I mean, in roundabout sort of way, it does apply here. I mean, especially if you are in a dark area and the tension's high, you're working very hard, and then all of a sudden you hear a like you said, that blows through there. It would startle me half to death probably too, Ron. I have to agree. I mean, and that's what I'm curious. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think those guys are totally correct on that. I know, I don't really use too many sensors myself. I just usually go and record stuff myself. I mean, I know there's a lot more stuff out there to use. I'm just there to usually record audio. That's my big thing. Have you ever devised or worked on any type of products? Oh, I'm sorry. I keep saying products. Have you ever taken on any projects like that, Ron, where as far as recording or just documenting and stuff like that, as opposed to just like alarms and alerts and things like that?
Well, on the audio spectrum, I can't compete against the Far East. I mean, they definitely got the technology. So trying to go back and trying to invent some kind of real new digital recording device, it's like beating a dead horse. You're not really going to come anything with better because, I mean, they've been doing it for so many, you know, decades.
Uh-huh.
Like I say, I'm not to plug Sony, but, I mean, Sony's in the video, the video recording business for years.
Mm-hmm.
We can't come up and say, we got something better than a digital Sony recorder.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to do that. But with their particular products, what I could do is enhance it is on the application side. In other words, on the software side. So someone picks up a piece of clip, an audio clip.
Mm-hmm.
We call the EVP, right?
Yeah.
Electronic voice phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's only a handful of programs. The audio guys out there have. Oh, we have. You know, we have Adobe systems. We have Cool Edit and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anybody out there that's got some good software programming background, you can create some really good, you know, applications that you got a piece of a WAV file and you want to tear it apart. You want to take it spectrum by spectrum. In other words, frequency by frequency.
Mm-hmm.
1 hertz by 1 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
You want to loop it. You want to slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
You want to pause it. You want to increase the speed. That's where the creativity comes in. So you got the Sony recorder, but now you got Ron's, say, EVP software application, or Scott's EVP application, or John Doe out there.
You do have your own application, don't you? I thought that you were there were discs floating around at the conference where that you were giving away, and that's something you were. It was some type of EVP program that you were passing out. Am I correct?
That's correct. I mean, it's not like the $1,000 professional program, but this is like anybody that's doing some investigations and they basically want to look at some type of software tools without spending a large amount of money or any money at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a couple of software tools that say, all right, here's a piece of a WAV file, an audio file, and I want to pause it. I want to step back. I want to step forward and see if they can make any sense out of what that recording clip was.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that, like, that we're going to do at TAPS is, like, you know, have some of these, you know, we call it light version software application tools.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody could add to the community. You know, it's anyone out there could say, hey, I got a better software tool than what's out there professionally. And all of us will go, great, let's check it out. So Sony has the hardware end, but anyone with a software, ability could do the other end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you can't just go to Toys R Us or you can't go to Radio Shack and go, let me purchase that entity detector system with the catalog number. It doesn't exist.
Well, no, it don't exist.
So this is where...
Well, you raise a really interesting and important point, though, Ron. And there are a lot of software packages out there right now that do the they're not aimed towards paranormal investigations. But the greatest example out there is, like, for example, I mean, it's the old software we used to use on the old Ghostly Talk site, Postnip, for example. You have a whole community of people right there, right? You have a whole community of people that there was a group of people that started up. They built the platform. And then a whole group of other people that came in there with programming experience went on their forums, went on their chat boards or whatever, and said, hey, I can do something better with this piece of it. Let me put my two cents in here, right? And then somebody else will come in here and go, I can do something better with this piece of it right here. And then you have
That's
a whole
right.
group of people that are adding to this software package and making it better and better, maybe more flexible and easier to use. And that's a very important thing, I think. If people with programming experience, obviously, can step in there and, like, take your piece of software, for example, Ron, and make it better, that's a really great thing, I think, to help people out. And I think it's really important, too.
Exactly, Scott.
Mm-hmm. It's a really important thing for people to do, I think. So more or less the equipment that you're working on, just to help the people out there and listening on it, it's more detection equipment that you work on. And you raise another good point about that. I mean, it is pretty obvious, like, Sony does have the market. They do own the hardware. We know that. They've been in the business longer than any of us have, probably. So I guess it's pretty simple to say, okay, well, we can't really build our own recorder. You know, but we can, like you do, Ron, build better.
Enhance it.
Well, with your software, or also have better detection tools, and which you work on all the time for the TAPS people. It's a very cool thing. Tom is jumping. Did you have a question or something, Tom?
I'm wondering if he's looking for beta testers for some of his equipment with different paranormal groups.
Ron, what's up? Do you have a?
That's an excellent point because no one ever really brought that up. I mean, this in the commercial world, just like what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And, Scott, let me back you up a little bit.
Yeah.
When you're saying about, people out there taking, say, so-called like a software tool and adding to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the commercial world, we've got the so-called open source. Look at Linux operating system, competing against Microsoft. You got thousands of developers out there who are basically improving, the platform to run your desktop application, which I'm not plugging or saying, but I'm saying Linux. So in the paranormal community, yeah, we can have people that say, you know what, here's a brand new type of concept or tool. Let's go out and let's test it instead of being just strictly, okay, here's TAPS thing. Let's have, let's say, for example, Ohio Paranormal, Virginia Ghost, which is CPRI, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The more people, the more of the forums get together and try it out, I mean, two heads are better than one. That'll add or subtract to ideas because you can't think of everything out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how long has the automobile been made, right? Since, you say the 1901, you say the car from Ford.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we came out today, I'm going to make a car that's going to compete against General Motors and Ford, people will say, are you out of your mind? We've been doing it for like 100 years now.
Uh-huh.
So, but if you could take some kind of, existing product and add to it and then have that circulated around the community, Absolutely. And like, just like what Tom was saying about beta testing stuff, yeah, that at least it adds and says, it increases the time, the research time back saying, we need to drop this or can we add that because this ain't going to work because of A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
If you just got one person looking at it, it's going to take a much longer cycle to come back and do the improvement. So,
perception.
I mean, beta testing in this type of business is absolutely, I totally accept it. I mean, it's a great idea.
Perception is everything, and only one person's perception, in my opinion, will not get that much done. You need a group of people to look at this thing and give you these different opinions and viewpoints, obviously. John, did you have a question?
No, I was going to say, you were talking about improving things. I was going to say, we're in Detroit, and right now GM and stuff is trying to go from gasoline to electric power and all this other stuff. So they're trying to improve something.
Well, yeah, I mean there are. I mean, as far as the auto companies go, thank God too. And they are actually trying to make a move on this now and move away from fossil fuels. That's a whole different show, though. Unfortunately, it's a whole different show.
And what's funny, you're mentioning that 35 years ago, they were looking at the same thing, but they said, well, there's not enough audience behind us to support it, so let's just drop the idea. But 35 years ago, can we do electric cars? Can we do different types of, besides fossil fuels? But the community was behind it saying, yeah, we need it. So if you got the audience behind it, all the people saying, let's we'll back you up.
Mm-hmm.
We need this. This is what we need. We need to go to this direction.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you get the action. Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's a very important point. I can't say enough. We need more people out there to have their input like that, like you said, Tom, more beta testers out there to try these things out. I think, we have stuff here in the Haunted Winery, for example, that have been given to us. And, you know, Ron, I have to talk to you about this, too, after the show or sometime. I'm about to send you the specs for this particular piece of equipment that we have, because we do have a few toys here that we've had given to us by one of our dear friends of the show named Marcus Leader. And he's actually sent us some pretty interesting, like, you know, microphone-type objects and things that are supposed to hopefully increase your chances of capturing EVP. We can discuss that more later. Why don't we take a quick break, though, all right? Because when we come back, if you're cool with this, Ron, I'd like to talk to you about this project you're working on with Mr. Hutchinson. I've been looking forward to this all week, to be honest with you, Ron, because the Philadelphia experiment is one of my favorite things in the world to talk about. And when I saw that, you know, you're working on this project, I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be totally cool. So if you're cool with that, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with Ron Milioni, Dr. Ron Milioni. I said it right, didn't I, Ron?
You got it right.
Okay, good. I'm glad I got it right that time. We'll be right back after this.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from The Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.
Hello, folks. My name is Henry Rollins, and you are listening to Ghostly Talk. Touch your friends, touch yourself, but don't touch that dog.
We'll be right back. Dr. John J. Harper at www.johnjharper.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
I'm breaking a sweat here, I swear to God.
But you're doing it beautifully.
Well, thank you.
You're glistening.
I'm glad
actually,
to see
you. You're not sweating.
I'm glad to see my rippling muscles look so nice when I'm sweaty.
Oh, you are buff and sexy.
I am buff and sexy when I'm sweating. It's a definite ego booster there. Thank you, Brian. Tom just moved his seat over about 2 feet.
He's sitting between both of them.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Bonnie.
I'm John.
I'm Tom.
There's like 14 people here. This is great. There's like 400 people around me. This is great. I love it. Now, Dr. Ron, we have Dr. Ron Milioni on the phone, which was really great to meet you at the conference. We had an absolute, what did you think about the conference? I'm just curious. I mean, we had an absolute riot ourselves, and it seemed like everybody had a great time.
Oh, I had a great time. I mean, the people were great. You guys were great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the different speakers out there. Bobby did a great job.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was just totally awesome. I mean, it was, I call it, really great unity. I mean, great exchange of information and a lot of fun.
It
was superb.
It was cool to get together with a lot of people. I mean, it was fun for us because there was a few people there that we've had on the show before, and it was really exciting to meet these people finally in the flesh, like John Zappas and Mark Nesbitt. These are people that we've aspired to for years. Been to actually meet up with them, firsthand and shake their hand. It was a dream come true for us, honestly, doing this show for as many years as we have. And then to meet all the guys, all you guys from TAPS and stuff like that, it was just really cool. And again, thank you again for just we all had a great time together. Plus, well, obviously you gave me the go ahead. Your speech, your talk is up on the website also, Ron, up in our archive section now, as I sent out that email to everybody saying, okay, look, if you want me to put these up on the website, I'll put them up there. And you were one of the people that said, go right ahead. So you're going to be up there like twice, like within the period of like 1 week on our website, Ron. So you're gonna get some major coverage here. It's totally cool. One thing you've been working on. That thing was a lot. I mean, we taped. I think that the total taping, actually, just speaking about the, because people have been like sending me email on that, going, "Wow, that's like a lot of stuff you guys put up there."
Oh,
it clocked in at like 9 hours and 45 minutes of like. Of like people
45 minutes. Whoa.
Yeah, it was like a very, very long time. But I mean, it all came out sounding pretty good. We had to do some work on the levels to make them louder, but it actually recorded very well. So it was a lot of fun documenting that whole event, more or less. All the great speakers that were there, including yourself, Ron. The next thing I wanted to ask you about now.
Let them check the old word out when they get to that part. Go ahead.
There we go again. Where was I?
Okay. I'm sorry.
No, that's cool. That's all right. You are working on this experiment. I should say the experiment, Dr. Milioni, with John Hutchinson. And what I'm seeing here, what I'm reading here, if I'm reading this correctly, is that you guys are looking to try to recreate the Philadelphia experiment. I'm sure there are so many ins and outs of this. Where do we start, Dr. Milioni?
Absolutely. I mean, where we start is right. What came to be with this particular thing was, what other person in the world that has the most over-the-edge personality who's gone beyond,
mm-hmm.
and I said, there's only one guy that I know of that's got the availability,
mm-hmm.
the equipment, and kind of say, yeah, let's just try it. I said, the man himself, not the Wizard of Oz, but the Hutchinson himself.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying, this guy is the only guy I could probably call and say, hey, John, what do you think about pulling this stunt off? And he said, why not, Ron? We could definitely do it. Let's get our heads together.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, you know what? Let's see how far we could go. And he's the only little madman out there I could think of. I mean, like, I was thinking, who could I call in my neighborhood? Who could I call and you know, in the city.
Uh-huh.
I said, no, but this is the only guy that went beyond belief.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Hutchison himself, I said, if we can't pull it off, I don't think anyone can pull it off, but at least this guy's got enough powerhouse in his apartment, enough gizmos, that we could try to do it.
Uh-huh. Well, you guys, I mean, and that's what I'm asking is, like, okay, this is obviously, I mean, it's obvious by taking on a project like this, Ron, that you know the history of this experiment and the ins and outs of that and stuff like that. I mean, my thing is, I mean, without getting too technical, I guess, I mean, where would you, I mean, the idea was there, the concept's there, the idea's there. Where do you go from there, though? I mean, how do you... Technically speaking, I guess we have to get a bit technical about this, is
right.
How would you devise? I mean, are you building a machine for this? Are you just trying to devise something, some way around this? I mean, is this going to be a machine you guys are building or something like that?
Excellent point. Like, what do you start as a reference or a baseline? In other words, how do you start such a concept?
Uh-huh.
Well, this has a quick, you know, let's say background information for the, uh-huh, you know, for the listening audience,
okay,
out there.
Yeah.
You know, this experiment was based on how can we reduce the radar footprint of our naval military ships.
Mm-hmm.
So every type of ship out there has an electromagnetic footprint,
mm-hmm,
because of all the electronics on board, besides the radar, communications, you have the ship power, and actually, since anything on the Earth that's conductive changes the actual true and also... You know, what we're saying true, in other words, the magnetic print of the Earth. So if you've got certain devices out there that could detect changes in the magnetic field of the Earth itself, you could say there's some disturbance going on. So the Navy ships back then, as they're traveling along,
mm-hmm,
the thing was that our enemies at the time, they had these mines that were in the water. Magnetic mines.
Yeah,
so
okay.
So if you actually disturbed the magnetic field, the mines itself would go, hey, we got a shift in the magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? Explode.
Yeah.
And what happens to the ship above it? Ba-boom.
Uh-huh.
Vaporware.
Yeah.
This was the main concept of the Naval Research, or the Office of Naval Research back then.
Mm-hmm.
It was allegedly, the real experiment name was called Project Rainbow. That was the actual name,
mm-hmm,
of the experiment.
Mm-hmm.
It was based, conducted upon a small destroyer, which was an escort ship during World War II, and it all happened and was developed from the Philadelphia Naval Yard at,
mm-hmm,
the time.
I know the name of the ship, too.
To make the ship,
Dr. Ryan,
invisible to enemy detection.
I know the name of the ship, too. I'm just trying to pimp.
USS Eldridge.
Thank you very much. I'm just trying to pimp my knowledge of the Philadelphia experiment a little bit, I guess. Sorry.
Well, what we call it is the Dinky, or DE-173.
Okay.
For the people out there who want to know,
mm-hmm,
DE-173, that was the actual code name of the actual escort ship. And the reason why is because, well, you know, the escort ship is kind of like, it could kind of lead behind the main carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's just like a scout team. Send a scout team out there.
Mm-hmm.
If they get fired upon, don't send the rest of the troops.
Mm.
So this is where the concept was.
Yeah.
Isn't that where the term decoy comes from?
Decoy.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. D-E,
mm-hmm,
D-E is actually decoy. That's the actual part of the acronym of that.
All right.
We'll have to sign you up after the show. They're looking for you. The Army wants you.
Tom just found himself a new job. All right.
That's right. Don't quit your day job, Tom. Okay.
Tom just took a shot. Nice.
Hey, it's Memorial Weekend. They're looking to sign up. I was going to sign up myself today, but they said, listen, you old fart, you can't do it.
I don't even know what they say about me.
So that was the whole thing. So, in other words, invisibility to enemy radar was really the main concept behind that.
Mm-hmm.
But what was interesting about it is that on the so-called DE-173, they fitted so much tonnage of experimental electronic equipment, what we call as degaussing or massive generator systems.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, this is the actual spec, 75 kVA, that means kilovolt amp, that's a lot of power for a small little ship.
Mm-hmm.
They were mounted on the forward gun turret, and they were actually, they had four magnetic coils mounted on the deck. Again, the engineers at the time that was responsible for that was to, let's see how we could kind of isolate or reduce the magnetic footprint of our ship. They also had three what they call RF transmitters, which means radio frequency. In other words, an RF thing is kind of, you take your cell phone out, you get that little small, you know, rubber duck antenna. That thing is going to transmit, say, 5 watts. That's the, in other words, that's the actual energy coming out of a little RF field. Now, you're talking about three of these guys. Now, the power, we're talking 5 watts. Now, 5 watts on a cell phone, quite powerful. You can hit almost every cell fight. Now, this thing, this particular transmitter at the time on the DE-173 was at a rate of 2 megawatts each. In other words, 6 megawatts of power.
My God.
Incredible amount of power for a ship of small scale. We're talking about, the actual ship is about 225 foot, but it was such a magnetic powerhouse because of those massive two generators they had on there. And they had about 3,000 kind of, they call it 6L6. It's called a power amp tube. The responsibility of these power amp tubes was to drive those field coils of those two generators. Then they had some other stuff, modulation circuits and stuff. But when they actually turned the switch on, so-called allege, that besides changing the magnetic footprint of the ship, they actually changed the footprint of the boat. In other words, almost to a point where they changed the electromagnetic spectrum of that composite material to something you and I would say, now you see it, now you don't, on the visible spectrum. In other words, where the hell did it go?
Exactly. I mean, this thing not only, from what I understand, is this thing not only was off of the radar, it was off of visual sight. I mean, this thing literally disappeared in front of people's eyes from what I've read and understood, you know, from the documentation, Ron.
Exactly. What's incredible about that is what drives us researchers like to, like, this. You could taste it, that there is certain people that said, we saw it, it actually was there, and it wasn't there. And actually, supposedly, again, alleged, it landed up in Norfolk Naval Base. And people were, the most common thing was that this so-called system, this massive electromagnetic field, turned into a greenish fog, was seen to that slowly enveloped the ship, concealing it from the view, like we're just talking about. The fog itself is said to have disappeared, and then the Eldridge itself, the ship, only leave undisturbed water where the ship had been anchored a few moments before that. Mind-boggling. Now, we have done a lot of experimentation on similar high voltage type of power and RF power, where if you take the sodium or the sodium oxide of the water, that the effect of greenish fog definitely does occur. I mean, it's absolutely a positive chemical reaction. So, speaking to this thing on to Mr. Hutchison himself, so-called partner, well, we can't really do a full USS Eldridge type of experiment. So we're going to come up with it. We're going to do a scale model version. In other words, probably about 5 feet long, about a foot wide, about 13 inches height in height, of an exact model with the same type of material composition structure of the World War II ship of the DE-173 with similar generators, but on a reduced power. So in other words, we're going to take it, scale it down, due to physical, you know, physical requirements. And plus, there's only so much power that we could draw out of British Columbia's, you know, mains there. You know, they can't drop us like a, you know, a megawatt power line. But on the calculation level, that we should able to prove an actual show that on the visible radar that you can't be detected. Number one. And number two, that John has done in the past with the Hutchison effect, has made certain, make the metals into what we call to a translucent, or you know, what we call a interdimensional composition change of the material.
Well, obviously, I mean, and this is obviously going to be a scaled down version of this. This is going to be a lot, like you said, it's going to be a lot less power, thank goodness. Because that much power, I mean, we know the history. I mean, I'm sure you've read up on all the history, Ron, of what happened to some of the people when the third time they did this experiment back then, and they actually put a crew on that ship. And the Hutchinson effect we're discussing right now, where these people literally became part of the ship.
Exactly. Yep. What they were saying is it was basically like a faint outline of the hull that remained visible in the water.
Mm-hmm.
It became a blinding blue flash
mm-hmm.
to some of the witnesses when the ship completely vanished within seconds when it reappeared in Norfolk, Virginia, which was seen for several minutes now, according to some key eyewitness accounts. Then the Eldridge disappeared again from Norfolk, and it came back in the Philadelphia Naval Yard, and the sailors were not only missing, never returned, some of them were actually insane, and the strangest of all, this is what intrigues us, five men were fused
to
part of the metal of the ship's structure.
Exactly, that's what I was saying, is these people became part of the ship itself, which is obviously the crux of this whole story of the Philadelphia experiment, is that how could that happen? And that is, I mean, from what we're seeing here, that is part of the Hutchinson effect, where the metal becomes a translucent type thing. And I've heard all types of theories on this, Ron, where obviously if you're dealing with that much power that they were using on the USS Eldridge at the time, that you literally alter your state of being. You alter the state of being with that material, and you alter your state of being as a, well, as a fleshy type of human being, and those two things can fuse into one. I don't know all the ins and outs, unfortunately, but that's kind of a high-level thing I've heard about that. With your experiment, though, it's obviously going to be a scaled-down version of this, where you're going to scale down the power and the actual size of the ship. So hopefully, I don't hope nobody gets caught in the ship either, and I hope nothing like that happens with this experiment, too.
Any volunteers, Tom?
Is it true that you guys are going to be having this live demo?
They're trying to line up a bunch of different teams out there. The National Geographic's really interested in this.
Mm.
Like National Geographic, out of all people, you know, you know, they do, you know, like, you know, like the, you know, the mountains in Africa, how they're changing if they're thousands of years. All of a sudden they get involved with sci-fi stuff. I said, what the hell, you know?
Well, yeah.
Scientific America, something like that.
They're going to try to get as much as crazy media as possible. I like to get my local news, Channel 12 News, there, because I hate that station. I like to definitely disappear them off the face of the map. It's so lame. It's unbelievable.
Well, here's the
they
problem.
Talk about, not to get sidetracked, Scott, but they talk about on a Sunday morning, like today, you know, which is like 6 o'clock in the morning, they'll say, we have very light traffic out there. No shit, everybody's still asleep. Of course there's light traffic. So I have to disappear that station. But anyway, getting back on track. Go ahead.
Can you imagine, though, if you guys actually succeed in this, can you imagine the police department and stuff like that putting it in their police cars and trying to...
I don't even want to hear about that, man. I don't even want to hear about that right now.
Forget about your local radar trap. Now you got your local Philadelphia experiment trap.
Well, yeah.
Okay, they go Scott going on, you know, 98 miles an hour. Gone.
You see him drive that fast.
Transport Scott into a local police station, and you're, where am I in here? Oh, you went through time travel because you violated the speed limit.
I end up back in the Wild West.
That would be an interesting concept.
I need something like that, though, Ron. I really do. I finally gotten over the sadness and depression of another traffic violation that I got a couple of months ago, and I can really use a tool like this to help me out, I think. So, you know, I'm willing to work with you as a beta tester on this, too. If you want to install it in my vehicle, I'd be more than happy to help. Out.
Well, you know the departments
signing you up right now. You get that email, respond to it.
What was that, Tom?
I just said, you know the departments will have detectors right away in their cruisers.
It's
so just like radar detectors.
We have the new Hutchinson detector out here, ladies and gentlemen. I can see it already.
I do have one question, though,
yeah,
if this works.
Go ahead, John.
If you make this model disappear, is it possible, are you guys going to have, like, thermal imaging out there so to see if it either comes up on heat when it disappears, so that way you can...
Yeah, in other words, the game plan is to cover all the spectrums, infrared, ultraviolet, or, you know, we call it thermal. I can't really have too much X-ray stuff there because unless there's volunteers, in other words, you know, some of the research labs have X-ray detection equipment and stuff like that, but you know, they're tons of money, and they're basically planted in the lab, like at Brookhaven Lab or at Livermore out west out there. They're not going to really take that thing apart just for that. But the basic viewing equipment, absolutely, you know, visible spectrum, infrared, ultraviolet. They want to try to capture most of that, you know, spectrum out there and see where it's going to change. Now, definitely in the ultraviolet spectrum, you're definitely going to see some transformation. In other words, you're going to see stuff actually change because you're changing the molecular properties of the material at that point in time. But what's interesting is this by screwing up the electron combination. In other words, you know how sodium and then you got chlorine. When they get together, you know, you have sodium chloride, you got the salt.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a way of when you have this high-induced electromagnetic field, the atoms, like, if they're supposed to unite or repel or join, there are some strange rules of physics that behaves that's unpredictable. That's the Hutchinson effect, for example,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you have, like, well, how can a piece of metal join a piece of wood? You know, we call it the unity of gelification, like the unity of marriage, right?
Mm-hmm.
The unity of gelification without burning the actual remaining atom or composition of the wood.
Mm-hmm.
So with certain ways of the electromagnetic concentration, this behavior of properties is unpredictable. That's what happened to them back in the 40s. They didn't predict that when you have the certain electromagnetic field, a certain power in a certain range, and that type of generation, that, and you're dealing with, you know, a soft base, because that's what seawater is. But you do got conduction. Don't forget, you got the hull of the ship in the water. Now, the ship is the ground, right? It's like this good old ground, negative. But it's 100% conductive. It's sitting in the salt water.
Mm-hmm.
Man, salt water is such conductivity, you know, of electrons that, you know, out of the normal, you got, it's not really a ground system. Now you have a total conduction system that's maybe uncontrollable, and these are the results that happen. So the same thing is, all right, let's drop it in this salt water solution again, you know, like seawater, and, you know, fire it up, have the magnetic field start going from negative to positive. It's such a revolution that you see what happens to the material in between. Of course, we're not going to have any persons involved on board. First of all, you need to find a midget. We're thinking about maybe some pigs. That's way beyond further on. I just want to see the basic structure of the metal, of the material, what happens under the certain condition. And we know predictability that definitely on the radar, it'll come back as, well, it doesn't exist on the radar screen. So when we start putting more concentrated force, that hopefully we should see some gelification, in other words, some transparency under certain observation, visible spectrum, let's say, the ship is gone. Or where is it?
Dr. Malone,
it might be still in the same physical spot, but to you and I, visibly, it's not there. So we're going to see how far we can go. Again, this wasn't reproduced every week or every month. These things happen. This happened once in time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see what happens if we try to repeat it.
Tom had a question for you, Dr. Milione.
You're working with data from back in the 40s. Now, are you using anything new based on quantum physics in your calculations, or are you pretty much sticking to the original experiment?
No. John is totally using, make it as classic as possible.
Mm-hmm.
No new type of technology. No something, you know. Atomic element, you know, like 110 or 120 or anything like that. Well, Bob Lazar is 115. I won't get there right now.
Mm-hmm.
I just
watched that special today.
As possible.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just watched that special today. As a matter of fact, Dr. Milioni, I was watching with Bob Lazar the UFO interview one where they interviewed him actually. And he talks about Element 115.
And I missed the show. I was not watching the Ask Ahead.
Well, I have, and I own it. So I was watching it. It's funny that you brought that up, but this is you guys are rooting this whole experiment. In answer to your question, Tom, you guys are still rooting this experiment in the classic style of how it was originally devised back then.
Yep.
And you guys are building this thing.
We don't want to change the. You know, we don't want to really introduce. We want to keep the classic baseline to see how realistic it was that if they did come across something that they didn't expect, that we could, like, sit back and up. Hey, the Navy tried this, and it absolutely was unpredictable. This is what happened, and this is what can happen in an experiment that's kind of, like, say, well, it kind of went outside the test tube type of experiment. Introducing other new stuff in here, it only will kind of not give us the real data. So we want to keep it as classic as possible with all the stuff.
Absolutely fascinating. I am so looking forward to seeing how this works out, Dr. Milioni. Unfortunately, we're totally out of time here. We have to make way for Full Moon Radio. But hang on the line for 1 second, okay, Dr. Ron? Just don't go anywhere because we want to talk to you after the show for a second, if that's okay. I need to say thank you to, I can't do this stuff. Doug is such a nice person. I'm such a mean, nasty person, and Doug is such a nice person. But I'm gonna try to sound as sincere about this as possible. I want to say thank you to the listeners. I want to say thank you to our friends in the chat room. I want to say thank you to all of our wonderful affiliates who take care of us and push this show out for us and let other people hear and expose this show to other people. I need to especially thank John and Tom and Bonnie and Amber, my Amber, and John's Amber, for hanging out here and keeping me company tonight, guys. I really appreciate it, and thanks for helping me out. Doug's out in the woods right now, probably somewhere ghost hunting. And I'm here working away. But, guys, this has been Ghostly Talk. I hope you enjoyed it, okay? I'm doing new stuff here tonight, so I hope things didn't get too crazy. But we're going to be back here next week again like we always are. Next week, I don't even know what's going on next week. We have a whole new month of stuff coming up, and I have to do the schedule. I will have the schedule up by this week, I promise. People always email me and say, where's the schedule coming up? I'll have it up this week, I promise. I'll have the schedule up. On that note, though, this has been Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Bonnie.
I'm John.
And I'm Tom.
And
there's Ron.
Bye, Manny.
Bye, Manny. Thanks again, Ron, for being
on
the show. Ron, thanks for coming on the show also. Hang on the line for 1 second, okay?
Okay, bud.
We're out of here, guys. See you later. Have a good week.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
To listen to now.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.